We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Upcoming on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, Alan Soslowski joins me as we try to identify breakout players and how to acquire them. All next on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Jeff Erickson. He's Alan Soslowski. He is the most versatile man at RotoWire.com. Ready to jump in at a moment's notice to do a podcast with us. I know we're going to have Nelson Souza today. He had some internet issues. We're going to have him next week. Don't worry. Nelson's still great. We're going to get him. But Alan's great, too. And Alan's going to help us now. Alan, thank you for jumping in on short notice. How you doing?
You know, it's like when you're a soldier on a submarine, you have the cook knows how to fire the missiles. The guy who can launch the nukes could also flip the eggs. I mean, when you're on a sub like that we call RotoWire, you have to be able to do everything.
Yeah, that's true. It is true. And you're good at that, too. So let's talk about what's going on. We're going to talk breakouts, but first let's hit the news of the day. There's a lot of news of the day, as always, at this time of year. It's awesome. We're going to start off, Deshaun Watson. We're still waiting for the hammer to come down. We have an idea it could happen by the end of the week. The Cleveland Browns are planning on forging ahead as if he's still going to play this year. He's going to start Friday's preseason game in Jacksonville. So a road start for Deshaun Watson. Now, it's a pretty decent landing point. Probably won't be packed. You know, won't be a ton of partisans there. As far as places go for him to start, this is probably good for them, but I thought it was interesting that they're just going to go ahead and play as if he's going to play this year.
Well, it looks much more like he's going to be suspended for double digit games or maybe even the whole season. It's not going to be six, right? I mean, at very minimum, I think we could assume eight, but that's being optimistic. There's been a lot of criticism that you give this guy the biggest contract in the history of the NFL, mostly guaranteed under the circumstances in which, you know, there's a lot of controversy. So they want to see if it's even going to be worth it. If he comes out there and lights it up, I mean, you know, has, you know, two drives, two touchdowns right away. Okay. All right. This was worth it. But what happens if he comes up and just stinks it up and three and out, overthrown passes? That's going to be a little bit more momentum to, hey, was this worth it? Now, I know it's preseason. I know it's only one game, but what do we do in football media? We love to, you know, take narratives and run with them there. So there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on this game. And I think it's important for the Cleveland Browns that Deshaun Watson not only look good, but look very sharp so they could feel good about this major risk that they took.
Yep. I think so too. It's interesting. You know, it does change things quite a bit for their pass catchers. You get David Njoku, obviously Amari Cooper, they're fantasy balance is hanging in there. I mean, because I think it's just such a huge step down to Jacoby Brissett. I know he can be a caretaker, but you don't want him as a full season starter. We saw that movie before the Colts. It doesn't end well.
Yeah, I mean, Jacoby Brissett, I think what they're hoping is that he can Teddy Bridgewater them to playoff, to stay in the playoff race should Deshaun Watson come back after 10 games. I mean, if they can go 4-6, something like that. I mean, going 7-3 is probably not in the cards for them unless, You know, they can really just dominate with the running game. I mean, I just finished doing a video with Jim Coventry, and we were ranking the top offensive lines, and he has Cleveland as his number two ranked offensive lines.
Wow.
An elite offensive line can erase a lot of mistakes, and especially when you have someone like Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and everyone likes D'Ernest Johnson. That's three running backs that would probably, you know, start on most teams, or at least be a strong committee. So if they can run the ball and maybe utilize those pass catchers that you just talked about, they just want to like stay afloat until Deshaun Watson gets there. So yeah, Jacoby Brissett's not great, but I think with all those other assets and all those other strengths, they probably could stay in the mix.
You know, I sometimes feel Nick Chubb on the Browns is like Lucy the football with Charlie Brown. I mean, it's just so frustrating. He's such a good player, and we all see it, and everybody sees it. Even the Browns see it, but just they don't give him the volume that we want.
I mean, he still is a every week starter that you're happy to have. I mean, when you do your value meter, and for those who don't know about Jeff's value meter, new to the podcast, every week he ranks every player for the season. So instead of asking start sit questions, you could just go to his value meter, which is on rotowire.com, and you could see who to start. When you do your value meter every week, Nick Chubb is never going to fall out of your top 15 running backs. I don't care what the matchup is, what injuries there are. If Nick Chubb is starting, he's a top 15 running back. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I'd say if he's like dealing with a nagging groin injury like he was last year, then I might be a little bit more circumspect. But that's about the scenario that it takes, is a questionable heading into the week, not sure if he's going to play sort of thing, or if he's going to be limited. Leg injury, you know, that's the thing that holds him back. Other than that, yeah, I agree.
So there's value in that. So you're not having to fight anybody to take Nick Chubb. In fact, he's a player that he's like a boring pick, right? I mean, we hear that a lot. Like Travis Etienne is an exciting pick. But
right.
If we were to make a bet right now, who's going to have more fantasy points this year? A smart bettor would take Nick Chubb. He's done it over and over and over again. He's got the goal line equity. And, you know, Travis Etienne, we haven't seen doing on an NFL field. So when you talk about someone like Nick Chubb, it's, you know, it's the Lucy in the football. That's a great analogy, because Nick Chubb has the talent to be a top six fantasy football pick. But you don't have to pay. I mean, I think when you talked to Chris List the other day, didn't he get him in the third round? I mean, that's how far he falls.
Not just third round, but end of the third round.
So that's the fourth round almost.
Right. It was pick 36. It was on the turn. Now, I think that's an anomaly. And if you look at ADP, you'll see that doesn't frequently happen. In fact, he's 24 in average draft position, a range of 11 to 40. When I did the Beach F. Erickson last week, I was picking second and 23rd, and he was gone by the 23rd pick. So you can see that there is a lot of times when he doesn't quite make it to you. I would have been happy to take him, especially because I started off with Justin Jefferson as my 1.2. You know, you know me, I'm not a McCaffrey guy. So I was actually eyeing Chubb as a target. Didn't happen, but that's fine. That means I got another receiver instead. I got Mike Evans instead.
Nick Chubb,
I know you like Mike Evans.
Yeah, of course I love Mike Evans. I mean, there's been a little bit of he's been dropping a little bit because of, you know, he had a little bit of an injury, and there's been a little, you know, now I think
that was the day before that injury, though, too, by the way.
There you go.
So I mean, that was always fun to see that. And you're like, Mike Evans left with an injury. Oh, God, what is okay?
I know.
It seems like he's day to day. It seems like he's okay. All right.
Yeah, and I mean, that dropped him to the third round. I looked at some of the NFFC boards. I mean, that's what I do at night. When I'm going to sleep, the last thing I do is check with Tom and Greg Post, and I love to see the drafts that popped off because, you know, I have my NFFC draft coming up in a couple weeks, and I want to see where guys are going. And Mike Evans went from being, like, pick 15 to pick 18 to pick 20. Now he's, like, you know, 27, I think he dropped to the other day. So I'm still taking him. I mean, you know, with Tom Brady, and I want to shift back to the Cleveland Browns because we were on a good topic right there. But it's 12 touchdowns and 13 touchdowns in back-to-back years. I mean, he's got the upside for 15 or more, especially with no Gronk. So I like seeing that type of drop. But I was going to say with Nick Chubb, what he really represents is the last of the sure thing running backs. After Nick Chubb at RB14 on the NFFC, I just pulled the last 4 or 5 days, it gets into these upside guys or guys that have some serious questions and you could see totally cratering. Nick Chubb is too big to fail. His floor is high. Doesn't have that super high upside, but that's baked into the late second round.
Javier G asks, Chubb over Swift, Kamara, or Barkley? Answer is no on Swift and Barkley. Kamara, I still have a little bit behind. But that's only because that's accounting for Kamara perhaps having still the specter of a suspension hanging over him. Somehow we've landed on six as the likely number, but that we're all spitballing on that too, by the way. That's there's no like edict saying we can't wait to hand him a six-game suspension. That's just the number of people have kind of arrived at. But it could be a whole year. It could be nothing. Could be not something next year. We don't know. So that's the only reason why I'm a little more circumspect about that. But actually, you know, Barkley versus Chubb is, you know, it's that's a upside versus certainty call there. I mean, Barkley has 1.1 upside. Chubb probably doesn't. But Barkley also has the floor is lava floor. I mean, that's the problem.
You don't have to make that choice because Barkley in pro drafts is now going in the 10th pick, right? I mean,
yeah,
he's going,
yeah.
So you don't have to make
14th. So usually he's long gone. If you're sitting where I was, yeah, you're not going to get Barkley. But if you do have that choice, if you do, I mean, it's all about your style of drafting. My style of drafting is I'm going to go Chubb over Barkley probably still, but it's close.
Yeah, it's Barkley. Like, to answer the question, it's yes, yes, and yes for me. Alvin Kamara, what I'm doing is I'm not even baking in the suspension for this year anymore, or I'm even calling it where if I thought it was like almost certain, I was like 75%, I'm down to like there's like a 1 in 10 chance that it could happen, like a 10%. And that's, you know, everyone's going to have to make their own guess. The worst case scenario is that it happens right when the playoffs hit, right, for the fantasy playoffs. Like it happens later in the season. Then it's like, oh, my God. But I just think with Jameis Winston, though, you have to change your expectation for Alvin Kamara. He's no longer that top five overall pick that's going to get 80 catches. I mean, with Jameis Winston, who's never really, I don't remember him really dumping off to the running back, and now Sean Payton, it's very rare that you had an all-time head coach and an all-time dump-off QB in Drew Brees leave in the same era. I think it's more realistic to say like 50 catches for Alvin Kamara. You know, it's just a different offense. So a second-round pick, I'm good with. I just don't think he's worth a top five, and no one's taking him there. I'm just saying, it's like I'm ready to put him back into the second round.
Counter argument, you know, Taysom Hill's not going to be the quarterback anymore.
Right.
Some of that was kind of what is eating away at Kamara's value. That's not going to happen anymore. He is a tight end now, and an injured one at that. So I'm not really worried about that. The running back, Mark Ingram, doesn't scare me. I mean, he was once a Saint and once was good. He's also once was many things. I'm not really that worried about that. One more follow-up on Kamara. You know, Julia asked that you took Zeke over Kamara. Now, we got to emphasize this was in July. This was 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, maybe. That was before Kamara's latest hearing was pushed back 60 days. I think that's probably why Kamara fell and why you passed over. You would take him over Zeke, Rick. I know you're Mr. Zeke, but you'd still take Kamara over Zeke, right?
Yes, I'm ready to put Alvin Kamara into the second round. And again, my stance on Zeke is not that I think Zeke is going to be a top three running back. It's that there's no way he can miss his ADP at pick 33. It's literally you're drafting it at that's my stance. You're just drafting him at his absolute floor. It's only upside. That's my stance on Zeke.
Yeah, and his, by the way, in the NFFC, his ADP is lower than that. It's 41 now.
There you go.
This is from August 1st on, by the way, just so you know. So, you know, it's not just, you know, Kamara that's over him now. It's, you know, James Conner, Cam Akers, Breece Hall is over him. We'll talk Breece Hall momentarily.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, let's talk Breece Hall now, because this was, I'm going to do another set of rankings tonight. I do it every Wednesday night, goes live on RotoWire with PPR rankings. We just did the, although it's kind of interesting, we also did the composite ratings just yesterday that went up. So I won't have too many changes to make, but I was low man on Breece Hall. I still am a little bit because I think that there's two things that bother me. One is Michael Carter exists. He's a carbon-based form of life that's still living, breathing on the team, on the Jets.
He's good.
He's good. They drafted him last year. And the second is they just lost Mekhi Becton. And I think that's a big loss. Their offensive line wasn't great. They tried to address it the offseason. They brought in the guard from the Niners. Becton was going to be right tackle. Fant was going to be left tackle. Now they're out of alignment. Their right tackle is gone for the season. And I think that's a big loss for the Jets.
Here was my argument. So just to get everyone up to speed, Jeff had Breece Hall ranked around 70 overall. So what does that put him in, like the late sixth round, Jeff, something like that for you?
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Just as a point of reference, though, yes, I Breece Hall I had at 70 overall, which
right.
I so, I think that was too low.
And his ADP is 40. His ADP is like 45, just to kind of give context.
And I try to not look at ADP when I'm doing my rankings. I mean, I do it just if for no other reason, just to make sure I'm not forgetting anybody or I'm not like so wildly off. But I kind of was wildly off here. But for what it's worth, Breece Hall, I put in at 60. I moved him up 10. We have a range of 27 to 60, but only four of us, just four people. That's just fantasy. That's the beauty of fantasy football right there, that you can have such a wide range on four people that spend a lot of time doing rankings and thinking about it there.
Yeah, here was my when I texted you the other night and I said, hey, let's take a look at Breece Hall, not because you shouldn't be there, but it's just so out of line with consensus. And again, it's OK to be out of line with consensus. I don't think that's an issue at all. I mean, you have to put your rankings how you want them. But here's normally when you get a player that's drafted in the top 50 of the real NFL draft, a running back specifically, that's basically like a first round pick. This guy's going to play. Usually that running back goes in the first round if he's a workhorse, or the second round if there's some, you know, like you said, Michael Carter. We have Breece, the fantasy ADP community has Breece Hall in the fourth round. So I guess the argument for his ADP is that it's already baked in. So I've been on podcasts, on the RotoWire podcast, saying Breece Hall is the worst pick in the fourth round, and then I've made it a couple times. So I must not really think that. I guess it's really
charlatan.
I know. It's just, you know what it is? It's that you've said this so many times. Your rankings really show up when you're in a draft that means something to you. I mean, that's when they actually show up.
You battle test your rankings. Absolutely.
That is a great way to put it. You battle test your rankings, right? We'll see what you're made of when the bullets start for the proverbial bullets start flying. So Breece Hall, I mean, they drafted him. He's basically comparable to Jonathan Taylor with his metrics. I mean, I'm not saying he is Jonathan Taylor, but all the warts of the, and there's a lot of Jets bias with him. I mean, everyone's like, oh, it's the Jets. I mean, when Mekhi Becton when the news hit the other day, myself, who's a Jet fan, and my other Jet fan, I said, I can't believe this. It's already starting. So
it's happening.
It's happening.
Zach Wilson looks terrible.
Yeah, it's starting already. So I guess really what I'm saying is that RB1 in a draft class is already being discounted. You're pushing him back more. I think you're 60. If you don't want him, the 60.
Even 60 is probably even light.
Right.
Because I'm looking, since August 1st, max pick is 54. I don't hate Breece Hall. In fact,
and he's good.
He went to my high school.
Oh, he did?
Wichita Northwest High School. Little known fact that I went there. I mean, everybody knows that he went there because he's. I'm just a person that talks about football. He actually plays football. So there you go. But
he was good. And he checked all of the boxes. Cliche alert, right? The 40 time was good. The athleticism was good. The college production was there. He was the first running back off the board.
How are the hands?
The hands, I mean, he catches footballs. I mean, he's a plus. He can do it all. Now, like you said, you identified what I think is the biggest obstacle. It's that Michael Carter was drafted in the fourth round. So normally we don't worry about that too much. But the Jets said they would have taken him in the beginning of the third round. They just didn't have to. I mean, they thought of him. And Michael Carter actually outproduced rushing, not passing, rushing Javonte Williams their last year at North Carolina. He's a good player. I said when you take Breece Hall in the fourth round, just be prepared that Michael Carter might out-touch him in September until Breece Hall proves that he belongs on an NFL field. So I think that your skepticism and your low ranking of Breece Hall is appropriate. I just was bringing your attention to the ADP gap. I didn't even suggest you move it.
Yeah, and I do appreciate, though. Sometimes we have blind spots, and I think I had one with him. You mentioned another situation, Javonte Williams. He is another person. There are a lot of drafters out there that love themselves from Javonte Williams. And the news is going to push it. The recent news might push him up even farther. And that is Melvin Gordon has a foot injury. It may not be too serious. We'll see. He was out with a foot injury in today's practice. Nathaniel Hackett said he wasn't worried. Something needs to be managed during training camp. I don't know about you. I don't want a running back being managed in training camp unless he is an established veteran. That's one thing he's got going for him. But I mean, it does encourage me to take that Javonte Williams second round leap. I mean, mid second round, you can still get him. Like, I take Javonte Williams over Nick Chubb. Is that crazy?
No, not at all. And by the way, just a footnote on Breece Hall. I looked it up while you were doing that Javonte introduction there. 36 catches his last year at Iowa State. I mean, anything over 20 means he's a good pass catcher. So
for sure.
Footnote. Javonte Williams has gone on a crazy ADP roller coaster ride over the last 2 weeks, right? I mean, a couple of days ago, a blurb came out that both Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams were going to be on a pitch count. Nobody wants to hear that, right?
No, I mean, no. Right?
That basically means that Javonte Williams, I guess you take him in the third round, but Melvin Gordon, he was ADP, was fine. When draft season started, before Javonte Williams was, before Melvin Gordon was signed, Javonte was going routinely at pick 8, pick 7, and then Melvin Gordon was signed and he fell to the third round. Now, Melvin Gordon, let's remember, he's an older running back, right? It's not a spring chicken anymore, as much as, you know, we'd like to think he's Iron Man. So I think Javonte Williams is a swing for the fences upside pick. Just knowing, though, that, you know, Melvin Gordon is there. If you get him in the third, it's a smash, but this news will certainly bring him up. And if you're going to try to win the league, we talk about league winning picks, another cliche, mark it down. You already mentioned how Nick Chubb has capped upside. Javonte doesn't. He literally has number one overall running back upside, but, you know, there's going to be days.
Chubb doesn't, though. I mean, if Kareem Hunt walks the earth, I mean, Chubb probably has top five upside, right? And Kareem Hunt threatened to walk the earth.
Yeah. And by the way, Kareem Hunt, I don't think that saga is over either. So I don't want to crisscross our topics here, but
yeah, let's go for it. Cross those streams.
Yeah. He could. I mean, if there's a running back injury on a contender, they don't lose anything by trading him. And if they can get some value, I mean, people are talking about like, oh, he could go to the Kansas City Chiefs. He can go to this team. He can go to a team that already has a good running back, Kareem Hunt. They could trade him to a team like the Chargers, Austin Eckler and Kareem Hunt. That would stink for fantasy, but this is a team that's pushing all in now, and Austin Eckler said he wants a running back that he can help, you know, that can help share the workload. Write that off. That's a team like that could go get Kareem Hunt, and then your Nick Chubb pick is just, it's through the roof. I mean, he's a top five pick in fantasy with or without Deshaun Watson.
Indeed. I got one more news situation I want to talk about before we start talking breakouts, but before we do that, let's hear from our Blue Wire Network sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
All right, thank you. All of our podcasts, RotoWire podcasts, are hosted on the Blue Wire Network. We thank them for their hosting, and we insert some ads as part of our thanks. And so there, thanks for indulging us. All right, Darren Waller has not been seen in practice for like 9 days now, and it's always undisclosed reasons. However, last night he was spotted at a Las Vegas Aces minor league baseball game, and he said, "I'm straight, man, all is well." What does this even mean? I mean, I know you don't have to say any reason why a player isn't practicing right now. Is this a contract situation or is there an actual injury?
Yeah, there's a lot of narrative and rumors around Darren Waller. What it means is that he's not on the. This is not good, right? You don't want this. Darren Waller was already a player that we, you know, last year failed to meet expectations of fantasy managers, right? I mean, he had one monster week, and you're like, oh, Darren Waller was a pick that I just missed out on, and then it wasn't good. And now you add the biggest target hog in the NFL with Davante Adams. I was already not interested in Darren Waller. This isn't good. Because if it's an injury, you don't want it. If it's not an injury, there's discontent. So either I think in the 72 drafts, the best ball drafts I've done this offseason, I think I have zero Darren Waller. It's just not a player I'm taking in the fifth round. I mean, in those leagues where you get double PPR, I play in some of those dynasty leagues, I have taken him because, it does have the catch upside, but I'm crossing him off my list where he goes in the, if he falls to the sixth round, maybe drips into the seventh, of course you're going to be interested, right? But I'm going to let somebody else take him.
George Kittle's going ahead of him now in the NFFC. That's actually a change. Waller was for a while, the number three. Now he's the number five and it's sinking like a stone. I'm with you. I'm pretty worried about him. I don't have any Waller yet. I'm not against early tight ends, mind you. I'll take Kelsey like mid second if he gets to that. I think there's value there. I'll take Andrews somewhere in the third. I'll take Kyle Pitts in the third. I did take Kyle Pitts in the third in the BeachF Erickson draft last week in the RotoWire online championship at the NFFC. I think there's points where there's value in it, but I often wait on tight ends. I'm almost never taking Waller though. I haven't yet.
It's funny. It's there, how you handle tight end and quarterback in a single quarterback league really is what draft strategy is nowadays. Everyone knows that you take a lot of running backs and a lot of wide receivers, and some people go zero running back. Some people go, heavy running back and, just get middle round. Where do you take your quarterback? Where do you take your tight end? I found myself landing on the TJ Hockenson and Zach Ertz in round 7 or 9. Those seem to be when I don't like the running back or receiver options. It's, you're never getting a good value on a tight end. You're always like, I'm passing on players that are better. But
Zach Ertz is good value. Every single time Zach Ertz is good value.
That's why I've been landing on him, because he goes in the ninth round, right? I mean, the downside of Zach Ertz is, DeAndre Hopkins, what happens when he comes back? I mean, it's a totally different player. It's a different position. Zach Ertz is he's a tight end that even if he has down weeks, you're never scared to start him.
For the most part, I try to either go early quarterback or early tight end, not both. The Fantasy Index draft, which is a best ball one, I tied in Andrews and Lamar together. But I found myself scrambling. I found myself trying to catch up on other positions. I mean, when you do that, you're out of alignment. You're trying to catch up on either running back or wide receiver. I'm more comfortable trying to catch up on running back, to be honest. Catching up on a wide receiver, I feel is hell. I don't enjoy doing it at all. I hate being behind in wide receiver.
Well, the reason is that in best ball, when you're scrambling a wide receiver, it's not as bad because that Tyquan Thornton you got in the last round, when he has his week of 3 catches for 80 yards and a touchdown, it just gets inserted into your lineup. In a home league, a managed league.
Managed league.
I mean, if a mid-range wide receiver, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is your wide receiver 3, and he has 1 for 23, you can't even play him the next week when he goes off on your bench. That's what the merit of pushing up the wide receivers are, because of Justin Jefferson, of AJ Brown, of Allen Robinson have 1 or 2 bad weeks. You're just putting him in your lineup, and the waiver wire is the other part of it. Running backs emerge on the waiver wire. It's very rare that Victor Cruz or who was the guy in the Cowboys that emerged that one year, Miles Austin, he became a waiver wire, second round receiver. So very rare that those guys emerge.
Brandon Lloyd is the all-time waiver wire king. That guy, that was such a crazy year. Maybe you got him as your seventh receiver in a draft. But I mean, that for the most part, he was a waiver wire guy and he was huge that year. But it's so infrequent. You're right. It's because running back is a opportunity position. Wide receiver is you either have the skills or you don't. And you find yourself chasing tail. Like you find yourself chasing last week's stats all the time with either starts or pickups. It's really a brutal, gruesome way to go.
Just to give the listeners perspective on who Brandon Lloyd was, if you haven't been playing fantasy for 10 years, it would be like if Devontae Parker this year led the league in receiving and in touchdowns. Like, was the, if Devontae Parker became the number one overall wide receiver, that's the equivalent to what Jeff is talking about when Brandon Lloyd, like a player that had been in the league, that had some upside and never really kind of hit, and then was the number one wide receiver in fantasy or pretty close to it.
2009, Brandon Lloyd only played in two games. He had eight catches for 117 yards with the Bears.
It's like Devontae Parker.
In 2009, in 2010, he did that with the Broncos, The Bears the year before that, 2018, he went 26 for 364 and two touchdowns. In 2010 with the Broncos, 77 catches, 1,448 yards, Alan. I mean, it was nuts.
How many touchdowns was it?
And 11 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a league winner right there. If you want to talk about league winner, that's it. Now, if you had to been starting him is the only fallback to that. But it's definitely one of those, though, it was the miracle. You got your miracle. Now move on.
And then the following year,
Jose Bautista in baseball. And he was actually pretty good then, too, but not as good.
And the following year, people were taking Brandon Lloyd in the third round, and he went back to being, it was like Cinderella after midnight. It went back to being just, a pumpkin.
Kind of. He went 70 for 966, so you didn't completely turn into a pumpkin. He still got you five touchdowns, but he split between Denver and St. Louis that year.
But it wasn't a third round pick. That's a guy that you take in the eighth round, ninth round.
He's the third receiver, is what
right.
he was. Yes,
right.
Exactly.
And I would like to see, I would like to see how the production was distributed. Was it all in like three games? I mean, I'd have to look at it, but I remember drafting him that year. I was the donkey in my league that like reached on the 2-3 turn to take him. And I was like victory lapping. And then it was just like, oh, I'm not good at fantasy yet. Like I'm telling you, I made all the mistakes playing fantasy when I first started in the first few years that everyone makes. I took Peyton Manning at the fifth overall pick. I mean, we all do it,
Oh, yeah. I took an early defense one time, like seventh round. Like, what are you doing?
The Ravens defense, right? Like a, push them up.
There was a Broncos team that had. This is like 25 years ago, 28 years ago. So it was a long time ago, but it was bad.
People did that, though. People did do that. They took like the Ravens the Ray Lewis Ravens defense in like round six sometimes. That
Troy
happen.
Aikman in the second round because his team always won. Yeah, I mean, but he didn't have volume and he didn't run himself. So, yeah. Hey, one more news item. I lied. We got one more I wanted to talk about before we go on to breakout guys. And that is Kadarius Toney. He's a guy that many people are pegging as a breakout guy. Hurt his hamstring today. Appears to hurt his hamstring today. It's a little nebulous on the note on him. Because it's just kind of coming out. It's a possible hamstring injury. Appeared to be favoring it, according to Daryl Slater of NewJersey.com. It's fourth limited out of 11 during training camp. He was already being limited. That was the point. But this was an unplanned limited one, perhaps. So, he's had some moments in training camp, and he's had other moments. I know a lot of people kind of like him as a breakout guy. Maybe it's because I did broadcasts with Liz for so many years that I reflexively dismiss anything positive said about the Giants. So I don't have any Kadarius Toney at all.
Yeah, one of my favorite things that you guys used to talk about in your podcast was it's not the size of the sample that matters when the magnitude is so big. What we saw, everyone saw it. Like Kadarius Toney in those games where he went nuclear just looked different. He just looked like a different player. And that's going to keep his ADP right where it is. Everyone sees the upside, right? All of the risk is mostly baked in. I know in the NFFC, I was on our Sunday Sirius show. I thought he was still going in the seventh, eighth round just because I don't draft him. But when I took a closer look, the professional drafters are taking him in round six. Like,
yeah, they are.
So they're squeezing a little bit of the value out of it. Listen, when you draft Kadarius Toney, just understand, I mean, he's one of those players that it looks like he could be marred by injuries. I mean, based on what we've seen so far, a player's injury prone until they're not, right? But the upside is so tantalizing. It's so juicy that you could easily see him as one of the players that takes that mega leap and it ends up in the second round next year. But, just understand what you're getting. It's going to be a player that has those type of days and risks.
My favorite meaningless anecdote about Kadarius Toney is that Urban Meyer was upset when the Giants drafted Toney ahead of everybody's expectations in the draft too. And at the time that was used as validation for the pick, by the way. It wasn't a critique of the pick. It was a validation for the pick. See, even Urban Meyer wanted him. Oops. But yeah,
that was the first red flag, by the way.
Apparently. Yeah. There are so many others. Every team is like Alabama out there. Yeah. They're pros. Mm-hmm. Who knew? All right. Let's talk breakout players. Before we do that, I got a note from our friends at Dynasty Owner. Do you love fantasy sports? Alan does. I know that. Are you ready for a new challenge this year? Dynasty Owner is the new way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an actual franchise. Dynasty Owner provides a unique and challenging experience that will test your skills as an owner and general manager. You will have complete control over your team's future. You can build through the draft, make trades, sign free agents, and manage your team's salary cap. Can you create a dynasty of champions? Sign up now at dynastyowner.com and use promo code ROTO5. That's ROTO5 to receive $5 off any new team. I will say the one thing that is a little bit different than the NFL about realism is Dynasty Owner actually adheres to the salary cap, whereas the NFL is just a mirage. So
it is so crazy because, you know, the more I learn about the salary cap, because I do want to become a salary cap expert. I think it is fascinating.
Who doesn't?
I mean, it's nowadays you get a better understanding of how contracts work, and then it does help you in Dynasty when you're trying, you know, when you're trying to project players, how long they're insulated for. I mean, all the time you see like these contracts are 5 years, $80 million, but like 20 million is guaranteed. And after a year and two, they can get out of it. It's very interesting. The cap thing that I learned recently was that they only have to get to a certain percentage of the cap over 3 years. So it's like, even if they're under cap, that's okay, as long as they get to, I think the number is like 85 or 90%. I forget the exact number, but over those three seasons.
Yeah, it's pretty wild there. So, and there's so many little things that you don't learn, that you learn after the fact that you don't know. It's kind of crazy. All right, breakout players. Alan, I need you to define what is a breakout player before we go any farther. How do you define what a breakout player is?
Yeah, I think that there's a few different ways to think about a breakout player. It's a player that's really ready to take that next step and move up a tier. So, for example, if you're talking about, you know, some of the guys that we're going to mention in the 10th round that could be players that go, if we redrafted in like week four, like in the third round, that's a breakout. If you talk about, there's going to be players that we mention that are getting drafted at their ceiling that probably haven't done it yet. But if they deliver on that, and I don't want to mention any names yet, that's a breakout. So I think it's my definition, the way I see it, is a player who really jumps up at least one tier, but a true breakout is someone that goes up two or three tiers.
Okay, very cool. All right, so how do we identify these guys?
So I have a tried and true tactic. And again, when it works most of the time, is that if there's a player that we liked a lot, especially a rookie or a second year player that hasn't done it yet, and they had a slow start to their year, what I try to do is zero in on the last 6 or 7 weeks, or maybe like post buy the year before. So again, just that we'll name those players, but I like to look at the previous year's production, not total production, but how did they finish the season? What are they doing moving into the next season? And obviously, if they have a new quarterback, if team context has changed, if the offensive system changed. So those are a few of the tactics I use to try to identify my breakouts. How about you? What are some of the things that you like to do to use as indicators?
I'd like to see what the professional drafters are doing and then just follow along. No,
I mean, that's a good way to do it.
Honestly, it's a proxy. If you see guys that are just helium guys, but you can run into some problems with that too. I'm old enough to remember Marquez Callaway going in the fourth round of my NFFC primetime draft last year. So, there's problems with that method, to say the least. No, I mean, you're looking to see, I mean, the more you watch football, you can see those plays that just jump off the page. The more you read about players, you can see that too. I mean, let's face it. Most of us don't have a trained eye. We think we do. We're not scouts. I mean, you know, there are some people that are really good at breaking down film. Christopher Harris, Brett Coleman. Those are two guys that I follow a lot that do that. Matt Harmon's another one that's really good. And I watch what they do. And, you know, on our site, Mario Puig, when Mario speaks, I listen. When he talked up Lamar Jackson in the draft, that caught my mind there. I do pay attention to those, you know, to our community as well. Yeah. I look for opportunities. I look for changing coaches. I look for, you know, changing personnel and just a player that's going to step up into that next opportunity. I think that matters too. Let's talk about some of our guys. First of all, we kind of classified it when we were like talking ahead of time. We were going to do a short little video, and instead we're going to do this. Like maybe have an obvious guy, maybe like a lot of people know, but maybe not. And then maybe a not so obvious guy. I'll start. I like Rashad Bateman. I've been on the record for that one for a while. I mean, I think the way he turned heads in OTAs and minicamp last year as a rookie before he got hurt was really telling to me. I saw some moments out there on the field last year after he came back from his horrible groin injury. He had other things where he messed up. He caused one interception. His hands might need some work. But you know what? All the time, I hear about this all the time. Someone has some drops issues. Unless you're Evan Engram, you can usually overcome them. You know, we all got the discount on Jamar Chase because, oh, the ball's a different size. It doesn't have a stripe on it, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's such a Bengal. Man, what a windfall that was. You know, it's hard to find that. Treylon Burks could be that guy this year, by the way. Lining up in the wrong spot, has asthma. You know, okay, fine. Does he get open? Are they going after him? Yeah, okay. I think I'll get some Treylon Burks still. Not ahead of my boy Olave or ahead of Drake London, but maybe in that next year.
We were talking about Bateman as a breakout, and you know it's a good pick. It's a good pick. It's not just because Bateman has the draft pedigree, was a first round pick, but the Ravens need him to be good. They traded away Hollywood Brown, right? I mean, Hollywood Brown did things that were good for NFL football teams besides dropping the ball three times in one game. I mean, he was able to get behind the defense, and overall, I think he was a pretty good. I still think he's a good player. Other than Mark Andrews, you know, the guys that are going to be on the field as pass catchers, Devin Duvernay, maybe James Prochet, those guys are miscast. I don't think that's a secret.
So, John McKechnie, our guy who follows the Ravens closely, he's talking up Prochet a little bit. And he's not the only person I've heard that, by the way.
And again, fine, sure. But I would say that they are probably, if I'm just going to, you know, put probabilities on it, they're probably more like a number three wide receiver on most teams. And again, if Prochet has a major breakout and John McKechnie spotted something, like, you know, I'll definitely listen to our guys. I mean, there's no one better at this stuff than John and Mario and our RotoWire guys. And, but it's not year one for Prochet. Like he's been at the Ravens on the team for a few years and he hasn't done it yet. All I'm saying is that this is more like that it's Rashad Bateman time. I mean, there was a great quote when Hollywood was traded and Rashad Bateman was saying, like, it's my time. Like, I got this. I understand what this trade means. So Mark Andrews, I mean, it's, you know, everyone knows that he's going to be Lamar Jackson's preferred target, but Bateman, he's kind of like an athletic Keenan Allen, you know? I mean,
yeah.
So it's not just that he's the Ravens need him to be good. I think it's a perfectly good pick as a bit. I would be shocked if Bateman doesn't reach his ADP of like the fifth round.
Yeah, Bateman's my guy, but he's everybody's guy is what I'm starting to find, though, too. He's climbing. I saw him go at 47 in a draft last week. So Chris Vaccaro, very, you know, veteran player, went and took him there, too. So, OK, who's your obvious breakout player?
Yeah, the obvious breakout player has got to be CeeDee Lamb. And you say, wait a second, isn't CeeDee Lamb good already? He finishes like wide receiver like 18 or 17 last year. It wasn't like he finished as a top five wide receiver. He's going as wide receiver 4 or 5 in a lot of sharp drafts. I've seen him go 5th overall in an online draft. I mean, that is, to me, that's, you've lost your mind. Basically, you get him on the 1-2 turn. If you want to take him at pick 10, it's still aggressive, but you're paying for what you think is going to happen. But I think it's going to happen. I mean, everyone likes Dak Prescott as an elite real NFL quarterback. And, you know, if you're trying to divide up the targets, it's hard not to pencil CeeDee Lamb in for 140 if things go bad, right? I mean, and if things go well, it's like 170. So it's an obvious breakout, but we're starting with our obvious calls. And CeeDee Lamb seems like a player that we're going to be taking in the first round for the next half decade.
Another example of an obvious one would be Travis Etienne or Kyle Pitts. Everybody loves those guys. They're going higher than what their production suggests, or in the case of Etienne, he didn't play at all. But everybody sees it coming. Everybody's on it. You know what? Sometimes everybody's right. And I think in both cases, I think for Pitts, I'm even more comfortable than I am at Etienne at price. Etienne, I mean, you got James Robinson to deal with. You have, you know, Jacksonville. We don't know if they're going to be, how much better they're going to be. I could see there be some concern there. Pitts, I mean, they're going to throw it to him in the end zone this year. That was just such an anomaly.
I don't know. It's like, Mariota to Pitts, what could go wrong, right? I mean, Mariota.
I'm sure something could go wrong, but come on. If you look at what he did, you know, yardage-wise, catch-wise, I mean, it's off the charts. And accounting for age, he's a generational player. I'm 100% on board with Pitts.
I understand this. I said this in one of our videos that we did together. I'm scared to draft Kyle Pitts in the third round, and I'm scared not to draft Kyle Pitts in the third round. And it's not that I don't agree with everything you said. And you know what? We could be talking about Kyle Pitts as the one point. If he reaches his ceiling, we could be talking about a tight end at the 1.1 next year. If he, let's just say he does the 1,500 yards and 16 touchdowns and it's 94 catches.
And you're doing it from the tight end spot. Yep.
That's what I'm saying. Like he will be in that 1-1 overall conversation next year. And some people will do it and forget it in the tight end premium formats. I mean, it's like going to be an easy smash. But when you are taking him in round three, you are foregoing a very good position player. And it's that. Sure. I mean, if he had wide receiver eligibility, it would be a no-brainer. But
no, it wouldn't actually. I mean, well, because, okay, if they switched him to wide receiver, it would be a brainer. It would hurt. It hit us in the brain because he doesn't stand out among other wide receivers.
I meant if he had dual, by the way. That was my.
I picked up on that after I said that. Mm-hmm. But you're going to, let's face it, when are you not going to use him at a tight end? All right, are you going to, I'm going to draft Waller too? No.
Right. No, that's a good point. It would be if he was a wide, it was like if they gave Davante Adams tight end eligibility. That's where, yes, I got it.
I was thrilled to get Pitts at pick 35 in the BeachF Erickson draft last week. That was one of the few picks I thought was like, yes, nailed it. I felt pretty good about the draft, but that was one where I'm like, I can't believe I was able to get him there. And every time someone else takes him, I feel a little bit of remorse, a little regret that I'm not the guy getting him. And then I take a wide receiver and wait till tight end until round 9 or 10 anyhow. But in this particular case, I will reach for Pitts all the time.
Yeah, no, when in best ball, like where, you know, the stakes are low, the $5, the $25, mm-hmm. I've done it because there's an overall contest, but you know, in the leagues where we're paying $100 or $300 to do it, I haven't done it yet. And you talked about battle tested rankings. I mean, I love that term. We're going to start using that a little bit more. We will credit you. Okay. But I think that's
I'm not the one that created it. I popularized it. I forget who had the original, but yeah.
Well, now it's yours. Now it's yours.
Yay.
When we talk about breakout players, I think that there's a really interesting dichotomy going on with Trey Lance right now. Trey Lance, I think everybody understands he has the upside to be a top five quarterback. The legs, he could be Jalen Hurts plus. Everyone likes Shanahan's system. But the guy hasn't played a lot of meaningful football over the last few seasons.
Hasn't even played meaningless football, Alan. I mean, he's played almost no football.
Right. You said it right. There hasn't been, he's not battle tested, right? It's all projection. So it's so easy to see Trey Lance being like QB 20 after the first 6 weeks of the season. It's like, you wouldn't even think that for Jalen Hurts, right? Jalen Hurts, if it's bad, is QB 9, right? So Trey Lance is a breakout player in a sense where he's being drafted right now by aggressive drafters as the QB 8, QB 7, and by, you know, conservative drafters more like QB 12. I think in single quarterback leagues, it's okay to be aggressive on him because there's replacement level. You can always get Daniel Jones on the waiver wire or Tua later on in your draft. But in super flex leagues where you have to take him in the middle of the second round, it's a dangerous proposition because once the draft is over, there's no more quarterbacks. That's it. It's over.
All right, so take a look at the composite rankings, and you can see my opinion on Trey Lance.
just got there, yeah.
Yeah. I'll be the guy that lets somebody else get that bargain. I've got him at 116. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, we have other people as high as 65. You know what? I'm happy if I'm wrong about this, because that means Debo, Ayuk, Mitchell, Kittle, they're all going to eat. Although Mitchell gets hurt a little bit by Lance rushing for touchdowns, right. But I mean, we saw two games with him starting last year. It's not good in either game.
No.
He has a hard time throwing. Now, I've seen this comparison made to Tim Tebow. Even Tim Tebow is way worse, I think, and he still finished like fantasy wise top 10 QB because he ran so much. Now I don't know if Lance runs that much either. It was weird to me. They didn't install any packages late in the season for Lance to come in and he at least, you know, be a, you know, for like some weird third down plays or anything like that. He didn't come into the game at all. If Jimmy G was healthy, there was no Lance.
I mean, think about it. Trey Lance, 6'4", 226 pounds, man. He runs he had about an 80th percentile 40-yard dash. I mean, this guy can light it up. He just played at a small school competition. I mean, his number one wide receiver in college was Christian Watson, who was a popular riser during the pre-draft process as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was multiple years ago. There's a lot of, you know, there's yellow flags with Trey Lance.
It's all faith-based.
But the good news is, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like in single quarterback leagues, I'm willing to pay for the breakout only because the replacement level is so in single quarterback leagues. It's not going to kill you to find out.
Lance barely even played his last year in college.
Yeah. I mean, it was a COVID year. Then he didn't play. Yeah. So,
yeah, they held him out just in like he's preparing for the draft. I mean, yeah, it can work, but I don't know. I'm just.
He's a player worth, if you were making a breakout list and we're talking about quarterbacks, he needs to be on that list as someone that could break out.
Sure. Fine. That's fine. My medium breakout is a guy that was actually mentioned in the chat here earlier, and I'll bring it up there. I was asking who's the next version of this guy. Well, I think this guy's got another level, and that's at tight end, and that's Cole Kmet. I think Cole Kmet's going to be, you know, Julia asked this, she goes, he made a leap of 50 plus targets last season. Who's this year's Kmet? This year's Kmet is still Kmet.
It's still him.
Yeah, I like Cole Kmet a lot. I've got him at 103 in my rankings. That's high in our rankings. We talked about it. If I'm waiting on tight end, he's a total target of mine. And target is the operative word. You know, he had 93 targets last year. I see him going to like 120 because some of this is his own ability. A full year working with Justin Fields, it's also just a lack of other. Allen Robinson's gone, and they replaced him with N'Keal Harry. N'Keal Harry's banged up. They replaced him with Byron Pringle. Byron Pringle's banged up. You get the point here. David Moore is hurt on this team, and that hurts them. I mean, they don't have a second receiver, Allen.
You don't like Equanimeous St. Brown?
No. He's a fine human being. I don't dislike him. I don't like him. I'm not afraid of him. Let's put it that way. He broke out, but he's going to break more. You know, yes, he broke out, but he's going up again. And, you know, you're getting – like, I put him – Cole Kmet's going to be in the same, like, Ertz, Goddard level. That's where I think he lands in terms of production. And you're not having to pay that price. He and Freiermuth are my favorite weight end and tight end candidates there. And then Hunter Henry's third. Nick Whalen and I talk about that all the time. But I love Kmet and Freiermuth this year, and especially Kmet because – there's just an absence of other forces there. And I know the Bears stink on ice. And I know their offensive line's bad and Fields is going to struggle. Even struggle bus teams still provide some production. Kmet's going to get that production.
Okay, so Cole Kmet actually holds an NFL record, and this is credit to our friend Cody Carpentier, who was on my podcast of the RotoWire podcast. Cole Kmet holds the distinction of the most targets by an NFL tight end in the history of the NFL without a touchdown. He had zero touchdowns last year.
Again, who cares? So Kyle Pitts had one. Are we throwing that against them? No, we're not.
Well, this is a point for Cole Kmet. This is good. Yeah. Okay. So like you're going to get that many. Oh, you're going to get that many targets. You're going to get, you know, touchdowns. So I would say even if the Bears are a crappy offense, Cole Kmet is, you know, he's got the upside to be the only red zone threat they have. Cause we all like Darnell Mooney, right? We do like him as a, you know, as a mid round receiver. But he's not he's not a red zone guy. And, you know, and David Montgomery he's okay. Cole Kmet is going, I mean, he's got the 10 touchdown upside plus more. So I think that was ridiculous that he had zero touchdowns and he had a lot of targets.
Right.
That has to regress. I love that pick. Every year, it's that one that one tight end that gets to the 10 touchdowns that ends up as tight end 5. Cole Kmet has better chance than anyone outside of the top 12.
There you go. All right. Let's do a couple more. Let's go non-obvious. Who's your non-obvious breakout player? Alan Soselsky is going to give you the key, your league-winning, non-obvious breakout player right now. Listen up.
I like Paris Campbell, the wide receiver on Indianapolis Colts. Yeah. We've talked about him in a couple different capacities. And Paris Campbell was a high pedigree, a second-round draft pick. And when he was on the field, he looked great. You know, I mean, he looked dynamic. And by all accounts, he is the number two wide receiver, and he's going to be playing in the slot. I know the team did draft Alec Pierce to play outside. He's more of a speed guy on the outside. But Matt Ryan and Paris Campbell have showed some connection in camp. There's been good momentum. And the only problem with Paris Campbell is obviously he hasn't been able to stay healthy. All right. So you're paying a 15th round pick for Paris Campbell. I think I usually push him up to like the 14th or even more sometimes if I'm a little depleted at wide receiver. But it's everyone likes the Colts offense, and there's no tight end to really take away targets in that part of the field. You could see a, you know, it's not that Paris Campbell can win you the league, but I think this is, if he is going to break out, it's all set up for him. And if he gets hurt again, it's basically over. He's going to be struggled to make an NFL roster once this contract is over. So Paris Campbell, he was thought of as a good receiver coming into the NFL. He played at Ohio State.
Drafted before Terry McLaurin, his teammate. Yep.
There you go. And so I would say that he's a really good breakout candidate. You should roster him. If you're in a home league, a 16-round home league, he's a great 16th-round pick.
Waylon and I were talking about Campbell today because he's on, like, there are three teams where there's a massive ADP gap between wide receiver one and wide receiver two on that team: Colts, the Falcons, and the Panthers. And the difference being is the Colts are actually supposed to be good, right? And so you got to figure someone with Matt Ryan, a real NFL quarterback, should raise his value. There's a 60 pick gap between Michael Pittman and Paris Campbell. Similar to like Drake London and Bryan Edwards. One of these things is not like the other. Which one could it be? Or in Carolina, where you have DJ Moore over Robbie Anderson and Terrace Marshall. You know, I think that, and by the way, I like Terrace Marshall a lot. I think he can play. And Baker Mayfield's looking better and better in camp. So blah, blah, blah. I think that bodes well for Marshall. So I would, he's a guy I'm rostering a lot. But Campbell, yeah, I've had my shares of Campbell in the past. The Colts, you know, we've never been able to see what Campbell can do. They don't ask much of him because he's never on the field. They never asked him to do like various routes. Chris Harris did a great video on him like a year ago. And it's like, we don't know because they don't ask him to do much of the wide receiver tree yet, the route tree yet, but it could come because somebody is going to narrow that gap between, between Pittman and the rest, whether it's him, whether it's Alec Pierce, whether it's the tight ends, you know, they have two of them there, but none
that are going to demand targets though. It's Mo Alley Cox, and you know, it's drafted. Grayson. These are he's a developmental guy. If Paris Campbell can stay healthy, he should outproduce his ADP. He could be someone by like, you know, early October. We're like, oh, this guy he's perfectly good to start every week as your third receiver, you know, 6 catches for 60 yards and maybe a little touchdown upside if he breaks one, 7 catches for 50 yards, stuff like that. They're going to hit him over the middle of the field. He does have some dynamic speed. You know what he's like? He's like an athletic Golden Tate. You know, I mean, that type of player. I mean, he's obviously not as built like an Iron Man. I mean, Golden Tate was an Iron Man until he wasn't. That's how I view him. And he's, again, one of the players I've pegged for a major breakout. How about you? Right. You got anybody that's a non-obvious?
I got one more. My non-obvious guy is Joshua Palmer on the L.A. Chargers. I want to make sure it took pains not to say San Diego. third-round pick last year. Came on late. Last 6 games of the year, he got more targets. Some of that was because Keenan Allen missed some time. I think Mike Williams missed one game due to COVID, too. So Palmer got more action there. Point is, though, Palmer actually delivered a little bit. And he's like the clear front run over Guyton and others and the Chargers. So many other teams, we don't hesitate drafting 3 receivers from that team. It's the Chargers. Of course they can support 3 receivers. I understand that, you know, Eckler takes away some of the targets, so maybe that's why you have some hesitation. This is the shootout division. Everybody loves Justin Herbert. Everybody loves seeing those games against the Chiefs and, you know, against the Raiders. I love Josh Palmer this year. And, funny thing is, I thought my love was pure, and I look at our composite rankings and, it's just middle of the pack among us and rankers. So everybody loves them, you know. And the thing is, you can find enough targets to go around there. The tight end play isn't that great there. So I think that you're going to look at Palmer is going to get an increasing workload this year. I think he's great for bye weeks. I think he's, injuries inevitably strike. You can slide him in.
Yeah, that one of the best things that you said about Palmer is look at the offense he's on, right? I mean, Justin Herbert, he's my QB too. I mean, and I would say if we were taking out rushing stats, he's arguably the QB one, right? If you're him and Mahomes would be the QB one or QB two, if we're just talking about passing stats. So I like that. It's just, you know, what's interesting is that the Chargers between Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and potentially Josh Palmer, they're going to have like one of the slowest trios. They don't really have anybody to take the top off besides Jalen Guyton. So that would be my one concern. But Palmer,
I can see that.
Yeah, Palmer's so much better than Guyton, but Guyton plays a role that Palmer can't, and you're not taking the other two guys off the field. So I'm with you. I've been drafting Josh Palmer because he's a good football player on a great offense. But I just, again, the only concern, again, this is why you're paying an 11th round pick for him, is that if they can't keep defenses honest, they are going to need to put Jalen Guyton out there for some plays.
Team four wides. Let's go. Guyton, go run, go routes. There you go.
Just run out the run the safeties off, right? And look, Jalen Guyton was good at that. He is a couple games that were not projectable that he did catch long passes from Herbert.
Right. I'm still gonna have a lot of Palmer here this year. Let's do lightning round responses to some of the questions that we've had in the forum. We had lots of feedback today. Appreciate you guys. I love this. Javier asked at the very beginning of the show, drafting from the 11th spot, usually going Swift and Kamara, Barkley, Adams. What do you guys think of that strategy? He's scared of the running backs in the third and fourth round, especially at the end. You know, a lot of people talk about the running back dead zone, and I get that. I see it working well, especially if you just stack tons of wide receivers after that. I personally love the wide receivers a little bit more. I'm almost always taking like a Diggs with one of those two picks, Diggs or CD Lamb, maybe even Adams at that spot. But I could see this working. I saw it in the NFFC draft that I was in. Both teams, 11 and 12, like got early backs and just pounded the wide receivers after that. That can work. What do you think, Alan?
Yeah, there's two ways you could do it. And I can't say it much better than you did. But, you know, I mean, I push up Aaron Jones to that like 11th or 12th pick overall. So, right. Yes. So that's so I'm taking two running backs there for the reason you said that you could just go wide receiver round three through six, three through seven. You're going to like all the options there. But if you don't, let's say you do go wide receiver. Let's say two guys fall that you like. You just named all the players that I think would be reasonable to be there. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to beat a dead horse or a very live horse, but Zeke's there for you if you wanted a number one running back at the end of the third round. So if you do go wide receiver is a recommended strategy to take Zeke Elliott in the late third round because you have a running back that Jeff is likely to put as a top 12 running back in week one of his value meter.
Against the Bucks, the hell I am. No way am I going to be doing that.
I'm not saying he's got the league winning upside, but if you go wide receiver early, you have a player that you know is slated for, a number one role.
Zeke's a plug and play player. I'll give you that.
Right. And that's the case to answer Javier's question. If you do go wide receiver, it's okay. Zeke is your life preserver in the third round.
I kind of like going one back and then, getting that. You know, going and getting like Elijah Mitchell later or going and getting someone of that ilk later on and, mixing and matching with the second running back spot if I'm getting stud receivers. That's my preference, but there's more than one way to fry that fish.
Yeah, and if you get stuck and you're looking for running backs in round five, round six, you could always push up Chase Edmonds, Singletary, Rashad Penny. Those guys are the next guys that probably they have issues, but they have jobs.
Yeah, that's fair. Chewy asked.
I'm laughing at one of the comments.
Yeah, okay. Which two receivers are a must-have, no matter what, in fantasy leagues? I mean, that's...
Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. Jamar Chase.
I would say, Justin Jefferson's a must-have, right? Like, if you pick
my number two player overall, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you draw 1-1 in the NFFC or a format that has three receivers and a flex, I think it's defensible to take him at 1-1.
Mario did that. Mario Puig did that. He took Jefferson with the 1.1. I took him with the 1.2. Pretty happy with that.
Right.
I mean, there's certain guys I just love having, and he's certainly one of them. I love getting Higgins in the third, to be honest. still or Chase in the first, late mid first on Chase or early third on Higgins. I'm very happy on both of those. Just wearing my Bengals hat there, real quick. But
if you want a couple boring guys that I think are must drafts, I think Brandon Cooks, if you get stuck at any time, is one of the best wide receivers.
He's always
to take.
There for you.
Yep. He's always there for you. And you know what? What do we know about Brandon Cooks? Here's 1,000 yards in one hand. Here's 6.5 touchdowns in the other, and there's upside for more. So he's, must draft is a little strong of a term for him, but he's a player that, I mean, I find myself getting a lot of because it's a boring and it's a good pick. And you called out Allen Robinson in our last video. I think he's a must draft. I think
Allen Robinson.
Yeah, we titled the video "Reach for Robinson" based on your pick. I think that's an absolute must leave your draft in the fourth round with Allen Robinson.
Crackshot says there was reference to our earlier conversation about Javonte Williams that Russell Wilson's such a great deep ball thrower that's going to open things up for Javonte Williams. I can buy that.
Oh yeah, anytime that you push the linebackers back or you can play action them. And Javonte is a great tackle breaker anyway. If it's just our question is he going to have projectable volume week to week? And if what that volume is with Javonte is either he's a second round pick or a third round pick.
Javier also asks, are you high on Juju with Mahomes? A lot of news with him playing all over the place.
Want me to take
that? Yeah, please.
Sure.
Please.
Yeah,
I'm
very high.
Shirt, therefore you have to do it.
I'm very high on Juju Smith-Schuster. Juju Smith-Schuster is—he's already had the elite season. He's already been, a wide receiver one. There was a time in Dynasty, which is my first love, is that we were talking about Juju Smith-Schuster as the 1-1 receiver, right?
So he was so young per level too. I mean, he came out so young, and then he just got screwed by bad quarterback play.
Yep, and then it seems like he operates best across from a dominant pass catcher that the defense has to pay attention to. He's got that again with Travis Kelce.
Julia asks, what's your projection for Jerry Jeudy? He's never topped 1,000 yards nor 100 receptions. Will he be close this year? Well, he got hurt last year. He might have been on that. I mean, he's only been 2 years. So,
do you want to guess what his DK over-under on yards is? I have it here if you want to take a guess.
985.
It's 905.
05.
Okay. Yeah. And do you want to guess what you'd take over?
I think I'd take the over. What say you?
Well, remember, injury, you're betting against injury too, and he hasn't stayed healthy yet. So if he misses 3 games for injury, now you're betting on when you bet overs, you're betting against injury. And yep. I'm not sure that's a great bet for Jerry Jeudy. I don't know. But Courtland Sutton's number is exactly the same. It's 905. It may have changed with Tim
and
Patrick.
We're looking at some of those props on Monday's podcast with Waylon, and I noticed that the numbers seem low. And that makes a perfect sense that, your attrition does happen. That's a good point.
Their catch totals on the DraftKings are 62 and 72. Jeudy's got the higher catch total.
Julia asked, based on your breakout definition, guy that finishes strong, Amon-Ra St. Brown is a superstar last 6 weeks of the season. Didn't take him in the Vegas Superflex League that we did, though. She's gotcha. But,
well, here I have
other people are drafting too,
Yeah. And, what did we say? We said the last 6 weeks of production, right? But we also said what has changed. DeAndre Swift, who we like as a pass catcher, is back. He was out with an injury. TJ Hockenson was out. We all expect him to be a high volume tight end. They add DJ Shark. I mean, they've added other pieces. I still like Amon-Ra St. Brown, but if conditions were the same as last year, he'd be an early third round pick. He's already being priced in that everyone's coming back. You're getting him in the 5th or 6th round, I believe.
Yep. Kevin says, how are we feeling about Joe Mixon's chances to lead the league in rushing this year? I'm the Bengals guy, so I'll take this one. Yeah, he's got a chance. I mean, they improved their offensive line. That can't hurt. I think, I just was reading today how Zach Taylor is a take what they give you sort of coach. They're going to do more. Their teams are going to scheme to stop Higgins and Chase after what happened last year a little bit more. By the way, Joe Burrow, he's not close to really practicing yet. Apparently, that surgery is a little more complicated than people first thought. So, he'll be ready for week 1, but it's less time to work with the full team. Maybe they're a little run heavy early on in the season. So just something about that. Another Bengals related comment, Tyler Boyd. Don't forget about him. Continuously overlooked on a championship caliber team. I did take Tyler Boyd also in that Pete Jeff Erickson draft. And yes, he's a perfect bye week guy. He's never going to be the top 2 options unless of course, there's an injury there, which we're not going to root for there. So,
I want to ask a question and pretend I'm in the chat. How about Hayden Hurst? Do you like him as if Joe Burrow is Joe Burrow? I mean, Hayden Hurst, you can get him as like tight end, like 28. I mean,
sure. He's fine. Second tight end in my roster. As long as he's not my starter, fine.
Okay.
Clipboard Jesus. Come on. Come on, Al. I tuned in for 1 second. You mentioned Zeke.
Clipboard's a regular listener, so we appreciate him. So he should know better.
Yes.
I have a bet going with Clipboard Jesus, by the way. We have total PPR points, Zeke versus Javonte Williams. You can guess which side I'm on. Mm-hmm. We're in a league together, so whoever loses has to pay the other guy's league entry fee next year.
Steak dinner, man. Raise the ante a little
bit. I don't want to hang out with Clipboard Jesus in person.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right, guys. This is awesome. Appreciate everybody chiming in on the comments here and listening in live. I really do appreciate it. Had a lot of fun today. Alan, thank you for jumping in here. And we'll be doing many, many videos collaborating together in the future, too. So tune in for all that on YouTube and wherever you get our videos. So thanks for listening, everybody. Take care.